biomechanics was always driven from sort of this advantage. How can I find advantage? And so, I've been looking forward to this to show you guys this. Okay, so.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson and Kenny Kane. And we are here at Weck Method with David Weck.
Where swingers are welcome.
We found out. We found that out. And
it's a swingers club.
Before you go any further, this guy, he's the asshole.
That's him. We found him.
He's
finally,
the guy.
After all these years.
All these years.
Oh, now I get it. Okay. I'm a little slow on the draw. I got it. Okay, yes. I am the asshole.
He invented the Bozu ball. The ball that sits in the corner. And for a lot of CrossFit gyms, a lot of functional fitness professionals and strength coaches, it's something that they really are not in big support of. And it's something that was real big back in the day, and then it kind of went off. Well, in my world,
yes,
a lot of people stopped adopting it. You go into any gym, you definitely see the Bozu ball. It's amazing. And in fact, we were hanging out with Ray Regno, and then
Ray is amazing.
Maybe Tony Blauer first.
Tony's mentioned you as well.
We're having breakfast with Tony, and he was talking about the Bozu ball, and he starts going off about it. I was like, mm-hmm. What the fuck are we talking about? Are you for real?
Right, right.
And he's like, just talk to Ray Regno. I'm like, well, I respect Ray Regno. Yeah. Ray knows what's up. So Kenny's got
four spears.
Kenny's got some fucking and a Bozu balls. I'm going, mm-hmm. There's something I don't know. But Ray showed me some stuff that I was like, oh, this is actually really helpful.
Yeah, we talked to CJ Martin too, and he's like, oh, you're going to interview David? Dude, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
Like, definitely go talk to that guy.
Yeah, so here we are. Here we are.
I love it.
If you would have told me 3 years ago we'd be talking about Bozu balls, I'd have been like, get the fuck out of here.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And that's so all right. So first the earth cooled, and then there was the Bozu ball. And the Bozu ball. All right. So the Bozu ball hit the marketplace at the crest of this, pendulumic swing all the way to the side where, stability balls were everywhere. It was all the rage. It was, that's what you had to be doing. And the Bozu ball hit that wave. And so it was a very opportune time to launch the product, okay? Because it was just, you go see the Lakers, okay, they buy it. The Yankees, they buy it, right? All the Devils, they buy it. And so it was very easy for me to sort of create this mountaintop momentum of like, look, don't trust me. Look, the Yankees use it, that type of a story. And so that's what hit the trainer market, and at that time, CrossFit wasn't really in existence.
Yeah, I want to touch on one thing further, because I want to make sure that people know that this show is not about the Bozu ball.
No, we're going to talk about it. Yeah, please, yeah, thank you.
You have many different products that you've developed over the years, and you focus on many aspects of strength and conditioning.
I'm not just a product guy, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and we'll get off the Bozu ball as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah, I just want to cover this before someone goes, these guys sold out to the Bozu ball.
Hang
on,
right. Makes sense.
Well,
I get it.
I think thematically, too, it's important to frame. This is something that a lot of our listeners and viewership pivoted against.
Yes.
And now I think the starting point for the show is that, hey, this might be a useful tool to enhance and improve the very things that you love to do.
Yeah, well, the only thing that I would say is I'd take...
All right, thanks for joining us.
Wait a minute.
No one gets out alive, okay? So I would take the might and the probably and put those somewhere else, okay?
Okay.
It is. Took me a long time to figure out that which harnessed the full utility of it.
Did you take the core language upgrade?
Why? What did I say wrong?
No, you said it right.
I said it right.
No, that's apparently what you're saying, right? Yeah.
Well, I sort of make up words and stuff, but as long as the point gets across, it doesn't fucking matter, right? So anyway, it basically is a useful tool because it provides a unique stimulus that will help you squat better. Now, it's going to help you move better, run better, which is that's my emphasis, but it helps you squat better. It also helps you press better. And we I don't know. Let's talk about a lot of other things, and maybe we can get back to that because I don't want your viewers to tune out, right? Because this is a huge opportunity for me. Everything that I do is strategic right now because I know what I've got. I've got some gold that's going to change things. And to talk to you guys, no bullshit guys, right? I mean, are you a bullshitter?
He only, is, actually.
Only in social settings.
Okay, no, okay, right, right. But are you, aside from the bar with her,
are you
a bullshitter when it comes to training?
I'm a truth seeker.
Correct, yes. Right? And so that's all I am, too. And the BOSU ball got a bad rap because, from a marketing's perspective, it's very useful that 30 ladies jump up and down and sweat and like it. Because when you go into Target, it's a 55-year-old woman who's buying the product, okay? It's not the guy who's in Walmart looking for deer piss because he's going hunting. He's not buying a BOSU ball.
She
is buying the BOSU ball, okay? That's the big consumer market. And it's a business, right? You guys are into the whole business of helping CrossFitters be in business. And to get back to sort of that crest, and CrossFit really wasn't, you know, it wasn't formed at that time, way back in 99, right? It wasn't CrossFit then. And what CrossFit did was CrossFit came in at an opportune time when sort of the bullshit had reached a certain crest, and CrossFit just said,
it's the peak of bullshit.
The peak of bullshit is when CrossFit really came along, and CrossFit said, all right, well, we're not going to bullshit anymore. Like, we're not going to bullshit. How many fucking reps did you do? Like, we're not going to do this silly choreographed dance step that we're going to change next week because you're bored. That's what CrossFit was. And if you look at the sort of the underlying Bible, right, of CrossFit, it makes perfect sense. It's 100% functional and real functional and varied and, you know, constant stimulus. And it boils down to, like, if I'm going to train a firefighter, well, I need him to be able to do things, right? I don't need him to be good at a whole bunch of stupid stuff. So that's what CrossFit was. That was the magnetic draw of people like you guys who, like, this is what you care about. A guy doesn't start a CrossFit box because he's a businessman. A guy starts a CrossFit box because he loves to snatch, or he loves to, you know, do whatever he does like that.
Wad for time,
right? That's what he likes to do, right? That's why you do it. And so you have this rabid community of people who are so dedicated to it, and it creates this culture. And it's the niche that you need a niche, otherwise you're nothing. If you want to turn yourself into like Procter & Gamble, well, you don't have enough money and momentum to do it, right? The generic bullshit, you got to appeal to a small group of intense people. It's all Malcolm Gladwell. Read his books. Okay, that's it. Good. Now you understand. So that's what CrossFit does. I have a great appreciation for CrossFit because of that. And then there's the bashers. If you succeed, then there's always the bashers, okay? And with the BOSU ball, what happened with the BOSU ball was it was misunderstood because you see people doing stupid things on it. And you see a lot of people doing things that, you know, there's utility in it for them. They're having fun. They're getting fit. They're sweating. And there's a very unique thing that I'm going to talk about, just the unique property of it. There's a unique training stimulus that nobody cares about, but it's very important, that's not understood. And so it looks sissy, and it looks bullshit from the outside, and it's everywhere. If you went to the Nebraska County Fair and you said BOSU, everybody would look at you with a blank stare. But if you said blue half ball, more than 50% of those people who don't exercise, oh yeah, yeah, I've seen that. Oh yeah, yeah. I did my ankle in therapy. Oh yeah, yeah. So it's everywhere. So when you're everywhere, you're the punching bag for the category because you symbolize it. What happens is a guy like Eric Cressy does a scientific study on stability training, and he uses a DynaDisc, which is fundamentally different, proves that, you know, okay, well, the athletes got slower from doing just very limited blah, blah, blah. And then the title of the article is BOSU Ball Suck, right? Now, here's what makes a BOSU ball special, and it deals with Tony Blauer. This is why I like Tony so much. Tony.
Four spears.
Hey.
Tony
is brilliant. Tony is brilliant, okay? I like being around him because I like being around people who educate me. So Tony's whole thing is the threat response, right? The reality of threat response. So 25 years in the dojo doing your wax on, wax off doesn't mean shit when it's a surprise attack, okay? And Tony's really at the forefront of that. Well, guess what? You're standing. There's a threat of falling right now, right here, right now. And your lower brain is saying, okay, I'm going to protect you from that. So you have a threat response to imbalance. And what the BOSU ball provides that nothing else does is a stable, unstable. Okay? That means that I'm on this undulating sort of thing, but I'm not in danger. I can step off and I can jump up and down, which means I can load it with more than my body weight, which means I can commit everything to it, and I have no fear in my lower brain. It's not about the upper brain. It's the lower brain. That's the thing that's really governing what you do, right? So what we're able to do is we're able to down-regulate that response. And that's why athletes find it useful, because it's my reaction response that counts. The reaction time, you can't really do much about that. It is what it is. But the reaction response, if you can stretch a second, and you can, like we were talking at lunch, you can get there first, well, then you win. Right? So that's what makes it truly unique. And the fact that you can jump up and down means that women can sweat, which is fantastic, because now, you know, we can sell a lot of them and I have my time.
Well, the thing that got me in the very beginning was just doing a squat warm up on it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just the process of activation and the compression you were talking about.
Correct. Correct.
And so you have the different phases of your workout that you put together. Yes. And you start off with, it's a general warm up, then a compression.
Yeah. So basically the whole first part of my session with an athlete has to do with the preparation and the core strength that's going to bridge the big core strength with the coiling core strength that we're going to develop at the end. And I'm going to prime your body to get more from what we're going to do later. So I'm going to prime your body, and the compression stuff just happens to be unique because you're tapping into the resource of the adductors in a way that is not possible any other way, and it's an untapped resource for us all. And if you think about it, we come from tree climbing ancestors, and if you think about climb the coconut tree, what do? It's wide hips, it's narrow feet driving to the center line, okay? It's skeletal transmission of force that's engaging the adductors. If I'm on 2D pristine, which I am, you are, and we have been for the last, however many years, there's clients and people who haven't stepped off 2D pristine in a decade, right? I mean, it's just two dimensions all the time. Mm-hmm. So that repetitiveness, if you're not actively training the nervous system and then the musculoskeletal system to sort of do that well, there's a beatdown effect. And by engaging this surface, it's an instant stimulus to the nervous system and the structural aspect of training the adductors, engaging them. That gives you better carryover. And you guys felt it.
I felt it. Yeah,
you
sure.
Felt it. It's
yeah.
My feet are lighter. My glutes are engaged. And I'm balanced on the balls of my feet. Oh, and by the way, I can perform a better squat.
No, I can see why Ray liked it. I felt it immediately. That's often something that's very difficult for me and my coaching team to communicate to people that are squatting, is to turn on the insides of the legs, get those adductors firing. It's a very foreign thing for people to feel. I'll typically get people in chain fonda positions, laying on one side and elevating a leg towards the ceiling to kind of at least create that neural awareness. But that takes a lot of descriptions, 80s references that 2% of my population gets is, and about 1% effectiveness. Whereas, sometimes just getting people moving with something that they're going to feel immediately is the conduit to the thing that you're trying to do, which is awareness, so that you can get to the thing.
Well, and also, here's the thing, is the adductors, you can really only target them and train them with an oblique force from the side. So it's the difference between pressing a weight and flying a weight, right? So, I mean, it's fundamentally different. You can't get... So any kind of adductor work that you're going to do is oblique, which is not the function of flexion extension, right? And functionally speaking, the adductor really isn't – it's open chain when it's pulling in. And I would call it flexion more so than squeeze, right? And then when it's on the ground and you're squatting up, it's an extension effect, right? So you're driving to the ground, the adductor's a big extensor. You're pulling it up and flexing it, it's a big flexor. And it's not engaged the way that it can be in anybody. I don't care if you can squat, you know, and snatch perfect. If you're fucking Rich Froning, you can benefit. Because now you have a way, and it's the resistance. It's elastic. It's an isometric that's elastic. And I love elastics. I do a hip flexor thing with the elastics. Elastics are faster than gravity. The nervous system, right? We want the fast twitch fiber. We want the type 2A to say, fuck it, I'm going to go with you guys over here. I'm not going to hang with those guys that are slow. I want
to. You don't have to point to me. I'm still fast.
No. Well, you got faster. That was just a reflex that relates to my running. But so it's a very unique and extraordinary thing, and I invented a new Bosu ball for it. It's firm. It's dense. It's rigid.
It's different.
So it's okay to still hate the original if that's what you need to do. You know what I mean? Like
the new one
fits in my belief system.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Like and so here's what's so wonderful is today in this day and age, because of the social media and the leverageability, the truth has a real, you know, it's like it sprouts up and now it's like, oh, the light is shining on the truth, so everybody can see it. Whereas, you know, you go back in the 80s, there was the conventional wisdom had the momentum, and there's no way to break through it. No way to break through it. And, you know, how many of you guys, I started, my exercise for training was bodybuilding. That's what I did. It was, you know, what is Monday? Monday is bench day all over the world. That's what Monday is. Thursday, what's that? Well, usually it's bench day.
Bench day again.
Right, it's bench day. You know, it's Monday is bench day. That's, and in the 80s and that, Monday was fucking bench day. Like, nobody didn't bench on Monday.
Well, because if you miss any other days of the week, at least you got that.
Yeah, and leg day? Well, maybe I'll get the abs. Forget it. Never. Why would I do those, right? You know, that's Wednesday. Throw it in. But so we all started with that. And then in my high school program, it was the Nautilus circuit, right? Arthur Jones, who revolutionized the whole deal and created the industry. The machines that, you know, CrossFit is like the fucking Terminator, what's his name? The character who's the anti-Terminator.
T-1000.
John Connor. That's CrossFit. Right. CrossFit is John Connor. Right? Fuck the machine. Right? So, you know, Arthur Jones and his Nautilus circuit, you know, this cam to resistance and no injuries, and it's so simple to
administer. We'll just call it Skynet.
Skynet. Well, I missed
that. That was the thing.
Skynet is the organization that made the Terminators.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just learned something.
You tried to take me down the Terminator rabbit hole. I'm going to go all the way.
Right. I couldn't even remember John Connor. Okay,
Skynet was the organization.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so
the guy that played the
so Nautilus is Skynet, CrossFit's John
Connor.
Wait
a minute, is that...
Okay. Or we could say... Greg.
Was Arnold Schwarzenegger in that movie?
I don't remember.
So that was sort of our evolution, and I remember doing the Nautilus thing, you know, even at that time, I was like, this is bullshit. Monday's bench day. It's fucking not Nautilus, you know. So that was sort of the strength and conditioning, and now it's all, you know, the word functional has been bastardized, but now it's functional. Now it's, you know, now it's moving your body, moving things, as opposed to, you know, sort of this individualized, you know, one piece at a time and not integrated, and it's all based on bodybuilding. Aesthetics kick ass. I mean, that's what, you know.
Well, that's number one.
When I was 13, 14, you know, when it was, you know, when the hair was starting to grow, right? That's when I would look in the mirror and I would curse my parents. I'd be like, I got my fucking freckles from my mother and I got my skinny legs from my dad. This sucks. And I wanted to transform my body. And I used to read the, you know, Tom Platz had the legs. Oh, my God. You know, like, I used to read that. I'd go on vacation, and I would, you know, vacations were time, you know, when you'd buy more magazines than normal, right? And I would just look at these guys, right? You know, I want to be like that. And even, like, professional wrestling, like, you know, Big John Studd, like, he was just too bulky. Like, I like Tony Atlas, you know, because he had, like, that 20-inch waist, you know. So, for me, it started out as aesthetics. Mm-hmm. And the athletic side of it was, you know, sort of a byproduct. And then it shifted, you know, once I had the hair, then it then it shifted to more of the athletic emphasis. But in the transition there, for me, it was just insecurity with the way that I look. And so that governed my training. And the reality is most people, it's about what they look like.
Totally.
Most people, you know. When I invented the Bosu ball, and I'm telling my friend, he's a sports agent, and I'm like telling him how great it is, and his wife comes down, she's got the laundry basket, and I'm like, oh yeah, check this out, you know, does this, that, she goes, balance? I care about my butt. What do I care about balance? And she walked out of the room. You know, that's because it's reality.
Yeah.
Right? It's reality. But the new compression stuff. When you swing a kettlebell with the compression, you light a fire in your, I'm going to say glutes because it would be sound funny if I said it the other way, fire in your, you can connect the dots. You get a fire in your glutes unlike anything else. And my ass used to be flat, and now it ain't. Okay?
Chicks dig it.
Chicks dig it. And they do. I was teaching a thing, and it's a group that I, you know, go to somewhat regularly, annually. And I'd say, you know, the ice was broken. We'd been there for, you know, 5 hours. And I say, yeah, my glutes, man, they're big. And one of the girls is like, yeah, you know, we were talking about that. So anyway, great. It's misunderstood.
So let's back up. You're starting bodybuilding, but I kind of view you as a like a biomechanics, functional anatomy type person at the moment. To just categorize you. Like, how did you get that background?
All right. So basically, it's physical inadequacy that if I train the way that a guy who's bigger, faster, and stronger than me trains, well, then I lose because then it's just an arms race where he has the advantage. So I was always looking for the edge, and I looked for the edge on the field and in the weight room. So I was the kid, 15 years old, going through microfilm to find an article about plyometrics that was 3 paragraphs long, and it took me 2.5 hours to find. Like, I was that kid. I was reading Grey's Anatomy. Like, you know, I knew all the, you know, the metacarpals and the metatarsals. I could name them and stuff. Like, you know, like I was a geek about it because performance was everything to me. That's what I cared about. And I was so afraid of failure early in my life before I was free to be this weird guy that I am now. Like when I was in the, you know, in the regular construct, you know, my armpits would sweat all the time. I had all these like OCD thing, you know, we got to go up the staircase a certain way. Otherwise everything's going to collapse. And so like I fortunately I'm not burdened by that. And like, and I'm weird, right? And I do things very differently, but the biomechanics was always driven from sort of this advantage. How can I find advantage? And so, I've been looking forward to this, to show you guys this. Okay, so I had been doing this spiraling action because when the paradigm for running is one up, one down, if you wind and whip, then you get that congruency of the muscle fibers, origin, insertions, right? So it costs me less energy to wind and whip than it does to saw back and forth, right? So that's a straight and that's a spiral. And I cover more distance in the same amount of time. And force, you know, the power is the force divided by the time, but we often forget that there's a multiply by distance as part of that equation, right? So this right here, there's been a lot of world records sort of set with this strategy. And I taught Tyson Gay that because he was supinating on the downstroke, which you don't want to do from just a biomechanical standpoint. That's going to pull you off the center and it's going to release the power of the lat to eccentrically and then pull it down. So I did a ton of this stuff, right? And I study fight and flight. Fight is subjective. Flight is objective. So you have to anchor to flight, but you have to understand fight. And I study Tai Chi. Tai Chi Chuan, Supreme Ultimate Fist is the translation. And this reflexive fist sucks for punching because it wasn't designed for punching. It was designed for climbing. Well, and not even designed. Designed is the wrong word. It was functional for climbing and it's functional for holding a stick. But without a stick, it's a terrible position. Right? There's no stability and the DIP joints are vulnerable because it will collapse into itself and break structurally if you condense it or close it.
By the way, folks, if you're listening,
yeah, then you
go watch the video.
Yeah, you got to watch.
Because we also
video.
Have a bunch of other stuff at the beginning of the show where David is demonstrating a lot of stuff.
So basically in the grand old days of old before history, it was survival. That's what you're competing for. And if you don't have a stick in your hand or a stone in your thing, then you're fucked. You lose, right? So it was very functional to do this when we stopped climbing. But empty hand when we compete for money, power, and fame, and survival's like way down, now we box and do things that aren't going to kill us. But if I arrange the hand like that, now structurally that sucker is like, it's unbelievable. And I was watching Floyd Mayweather against Shane Mosley, and it was the second.
Can you
I'll put it in your hand.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, can you describe it in a way that if someone's listening
okay, yes.
they might know what you're right. doing with so, your hand right now.
All right,
he's making a fist.
All right, so basically this is a different kind of fist. We call it the core fist. So basically what I'm doing, if a listener, right, if you're just listening to this, if I snap my finger, The middle finger is going to come down, and the last digit is going to be straight. Okay? So what you do is you want to separate the distance between the thumb and that middle finger as far as you can. And don't worry that it's going to sort of angle off. So you want to basically get the cuticle of the middle finger past or equal with the lifeline or whatever the hell that line is, you know, at the base, you know, in from the thumb. So that's the first triangle. And you got it. And some people's hands do it easy and some don't. So you get the thumb far away from the middle finger. Now the ring finger comes down straight through the last digit and it envelops over the top of the middle finger. And it's deep to it. So that means that it's lower down and the knuckle, the second knuckle is lower down. And now you've got to spread the thumb out and you got to keep the middle finger in the middle. And now the index finger folds into that crease between the thumb and the middle finger with its last digit straight. And you're spreading that thumb out, spreading that thumb out. And you spread the pinky out, spread the pinky out. Shit. And now what you do is you wrap it. I can put it in your hand and it's going to feel incredible. So you wrap it, and now I have three triangles wrapped by the thumb and a pinky.
That actually...
It's unbelievable.
That feels like a different fist.
It feels like a rock or a club. And it... You
all right,
know,
Doug.
So, and wait till I put it in your hand, okay? So here we go.
For the listeners, it's like a Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang fist.
It's a Wu-Tang
right
fist.
There. Now I'm going to go here, right? So for the listeners, watch the video. So we're going to bring that index finger in. Now you're going to wrap the thumb, and you're going to do your best to wrap that, okay? Now your neutral alignment is this to here. That PIP joint, the second knuckle or second digit on that middle finger to the olecranon process, the bone of the elbow, is your neutral alignment. If I hold a stick, I have the same neutral alignment. If I make a fist, it's straight, so that's not neutral.
Right.
Okay? So hold that really to feel what you got, right?
Yeah.
You got something there?
Yeah.
All right, now hold it tight. Don't let me flex it. So now, am I pretending or am I putting
real force? Putting pressure there.
I'm putting pressure, right?
Yeah.
So now, take it out, shake it out, make the one that you walked in with, right? Now, hold it as tight as you possibly can. Watch what happens. Ready? Zoop. Gone, right?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of weird stuff that I like, geek out about.
I think Doug and I are like, I mean, I spent 12 years in martial arts. So I'm like in my head just trying to unglue that. Like thinking of the times that I'd spent sparring like, okay, wait.
Yes. Okay, but
how quickly can you go there? Because, well, for ready? Instance, MMA.
Yeah.
I've got to be ready to grab.
Yes.
Simultaneously,
yes.
And
yes.
Getting in my hand in that position.
Yes. It takes a lot of practice.
But it's practice.
Okay. Well, here's what it is. It's here to there. It's here to there. Here to there. It's.
And now I show you my Wu-Tang punch.
That's right. Ancient Chinese secret. So basically, it's as fast as this. Once it's trained, which takes a long time.
Yeah.
A lot of effort. And some hands don't ever go there.
I love martial arts, so boxing, kickboxing, taekwondo when I was young, and all those things. But what was the context? Why did you show us that?
So let me think. Oh, because of the biomechanical right? Like, you know, how are you into biomechanics? And I show it to you just because it's so unexpected, and it's just the biomechanically, it's a superior arrangement of an empty hand for the purposes of making a fist. Mm-hmm. And there's a corollary to it here that you do this and you do this, right? And with this, I don't know if this is going to work, but I think it will. I'm gonna do this, Mike, okay? So, and you got to get this on camera, all right? So I'm going to put my hand here, and I'm going to put it up against my head here, and you're going to hit me in the head. Okay?
I'm going to let Doug do this.
Okay, Doug, you're going to hit me in the head. With all your martial arts background, you're going to hit me. I'm going to put the mic down for a second.
Kenny, you
want to
help
me
out?
In the head.
Sure.
Okay? Oh, why don't I have my phone for Instagram?
Hold on.
Do you need me to do color for this?
We're going to put this on the phone, too. I don't know what's happening, but we're doing it.
So what you're going to do is you're just going to give me a nice solid.
Okay, so for our listeners who are audio only, David is preparing himself to get bitch slapped in the head by Doug.
This is the point where you stop listening on audio and you pull up YouTube.
This is why you don't listen to the show. You watch it.
Okay.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to set myself up. You're going to give me a nice healthy bitch slap. Healthy bitch slap. So give me a bitch slap.
Okay. Am I intentionally hitting you on your hand that's protecting your head?
The idea is that don't okay. If you want to hit the other side, you can do that.
Okay. No, I got you. I got you on the left. Okay.
So now Doug just went with, I think, four consecutive pretty good
pitch good slaps. Shots.
Pretty good shots.
Yeah. She's calling the authorities, okay? All right, so here's what happened. So here's what happened when we did that.
Okay.
This structure right here, anchored against my head here, makes the force hit this triangle, and then it goes around the circle. So my brain inside is not concussing back and forth. So my brain is, it's just chill. And what my brain is saying, okay, do it slow motion. Here's what my brain is thinking, right? I'm here, hit me slow motion, right? My brain is going, that! That's what my brain is saying. That's an opportunity because you're committing yourself. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's just the geekiness of biomechanics that gets you there. Mm-hmm. And the free time.
Free time helps.
They say idle hands, right?
All the states of consciousness contribute.
You know, when you don't have to go to work in the morning, well, you know.
You think about how to, like, punch things better.
Oh, God, not only think about, but, you know, I mean, I've aggregated hundreds of thousands of reps. Like, like that little thing, if I'm watching my kids at the skate park, like my son's skating at the skate park, and I'm just sort of standing there and, you know, maybe texting or whatever and watching them, I just go up to the fence and I just take the pole and I just, like, bang, 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 just hit it with the middle knuckle. This thing is boned up. Like, and these are boned up so that, like, you can't hurt me here. You kick me in the shins, I'll cry like a sissy. All right? You get me on the ground, I'll cry like a sissy. But this stuff here, this stuff has been trained. Like, it's just, you know, it's like sticks.
Yeah. Older steel. Okay.
Yeah.
All this stuff is, that's really interesting, but let's switch out of and go on to a new category.
So perfect.
So you were showing us earlier some stuff with the ropes. You were talking about rotation.
Yes.
And then you were showing us some stuff with running. If you watch the video version, David was showing us a different kind of running technique that we had never seen before. And a lot of those concepts were really coming out of the fact that you were saying that everything's not so sagittal plane. A lot of it is really based in rotation specifically. So can you kind of dive into those topics?
Perfect.
Let's take a break and then hit that.
Yeah. Perfect. Sounds good.
You talk to yourself in the shower?
Yeah. No, I sing and I think. No, a lot of ideas come to me in the shower.
That's true.
A lot of just, I guess it's the water in the air or something, the negative ions or something. Like, I get great ideas in the shower. It's just a place for, I've just gotten out of my sleep, and now it's, you know, boom, good idea.
Mm-hmm. In the shower and driving my car.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's doing tasks that are pretty much automatic.
Yeah.
And it gives you enough free space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I ride the train, I just work the entire time. Mm-hmm. And it's, what else are you going to do?
Right? Sure.
You're trapped, so why not just focus?
People, 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 peep.
Yeah.
Trapped. All right, we're back.
We're back.
What are we talking about, Doug?
We were earlier. We saw you showing some of your running techniques. Can you walk us through that and how that works and how you came up with these new ideas or methods?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, I'm a big word guy, right? Like, I make my own little meanings of words and stuff. And the word BOSU came both sides up to describe this thing. And then in 2004, I met Buddy Lee, who's a jump rope, former Olympic wrestler.
I remember Buddy Lee.
Yeah, right. So, and matter of fact,
that dude could jump rope. Like crazy.
Oh, my God. Dude. No, I mean, I was in. Listen, I can admire athleticism, and I was in New York. We were both teaching at this conference, and he was a million miles an hour. Yeah. And so I'm looking at him, I'm like, wait a minute. He's not jumping the rope about half the time. The thing's whizzing around him, but he's not jumping it.
And he's so, fooling us all.
No. It's part of the thing, right? It's just.
Right. Yeah.
And so what I did was, I was like, and he gave me one of his ropes, and I took it home. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to get as good as Buddy, which will never happen. But
you'll know what he's talking about. If you get on YouTube and look at Buddy Lee jumping rope, it's fucking crazy.
It's
that,
crazy.
That dude's like, I want to say he was like a former Olympian in
wrestling.
That's right. He's super athletic.
Yeah, super athletic. Yeah. So anyway, so what I did was my great innovation was, don't jump through the thing. Just learn how to whiz it around your body every which way, and that's what I showed you guys is there's basic patterns. It's calculus.
As you were doing the patterns,
at
first I was like, maybe I can learn that in a couple minutes. And then you got into more advanced stuff, and I was like, okay, that's actually a different thing.
Yes, exactly. And so basically, The sideways one that you saw, what a jump roper does is because they're not training for carryover necessarily. Like, you know, a boxer's training for carryover. And Customato had Tyson swinging, you know, side to side without jumping because that's where the athletic – the conditioning and the timing is the jump, but you get so much more athletic benefit from the roll when you're not jumping.
And you were using a straight rope.
Yeah, you weren't
using anything with handles. Is there a reason you were doing that?
Well, yes.
Or can you do the same thing with a handled rope?
Here's what it is. You can every rope has its own sort of, you know, weight, density, thickness, et cetera. So it creates a frequency. Mm-hmm. So they're all different and unique to themselves. What I like is we train with this rope without a swivel. And so what we're encouraging is the supination and pronation and the figure eights. So if you have a swivel, then you have to be more talented to make that really come off because the swivel and the supination pronation don't always jive.
You need a little more sensitivity to it?
Well, what it is by not having the swivel, the rope's going to do what your hand does. Uh-huh. And the rope is just feedback. That's all it is, right? Who gives a shit about the rope, right? I want to be good when I'm not with the rope. Like, the rope is the tool that's going to make me ancient Chinese secret. You ready?
I'm waiting.
So master, you know, 80-year-old master in China, I no give you a secret, right? The secret is fucking train with the weapons. Put a stick in your hand, put a fucking rope in your hand, train for 2 years, you'll kick the shit out of the master if you're any good. Because now you know how to move. You have the feedback. But if I teach you empty hand, tansao, bansao, tansao, bansao, I could be at it for 3 years. I still won't know what the hell I'm doing. Now you're my student, right? You're under me. You're uki. I'm master. So if you train with the rope, it's like downloading athletic intelligence. Bang! And all you have to do is just get good at some basic patterns. So what I'm doing is, with that sideways roll that I was doing, it's basically a jump roper would do what's called the Texas twirl, where they would sort of, you know, make it go around a circle. But I'm training. And so I want the event to happen. The event is when I shift my weight and make that, the right-left shift. And I want it to be so timed and integrated that every ounce of my body is able to jolt with maximum pulsing power force with the minimum amount of effort. And the rope teaches you how to do it. So it downloads this like incredible software. And so that process, I changed the acronym from both sides up to both sides utilized. So now it's the right, it's the left, it's the upper, it's the lower, it's the hard, it's the soft. And then my study of Tai Chi and Feldenkrais and Rolfing, that gave me sort of the soft side, the yin side, right? Mm-hmm. So in the Western culture, we have gravity and ground reaction, and we're in the middle, and our goal is to be bigger, faster, stronger, kick ass. In the East, they have heaven and earth and man in the middle. It's the same exact thing, but their goal is to, you know, stay centered and live to 900 and, you know, just be still. And so it's sort of this yin and yang approach. And so by understanding that and understanding, you know, drawing insight from the softer side, now you have a sensitivity that allows you to discern gradations of force. So if it's just grit your teeth, go max, you can't tell the differential between the little subtleties. But if you get it to quiet and still and that stuff, now you're sensitive to it. You can feel the difference, and now you can start to make sort of that intelligence program it into the stronger stuff to iron out things that you just weren't even aware of. So it's all about the awareness. And that process of training with the rope, and then I did a lot of stuff with a stick, staff, and clubs, because, again, it's fundamental. It's the feedback, and it's elemental. Swinging and throwing, that's what made locomotion possible. You can't walk around with big cats unless you got sticks and stones, right? You ain't going to do it. And then you discover fire, and then it's, you know, now I'm not competing with the cats anymore. Now it's you and me, you know, the other hominid who can control fire. That's the arms race. And it's the arms race, right? In 2001 Space Odyssey, you know, I get a thigh bone and I hit you on the head. Doesn't matter, you're bigger anymore, right? And check this out, your left hand, right? The left hand is the sinister hand. It's the one that the nuns used to beat out of you, right? You're not allowed to be lefty. Perhaps is it a vestigial thing from a long, long time ago when bigger, faster, stronger was coming over the hill and I offered the olive branch, you know, don't kill me, don't kill my kids, I'll be your servant. So and then you can take my women anyway, and then shake on it, and now, boom, bang, sneak up on you with the left hand.
Just like Doug did.
Exactly. The earth, the meek shall inherit the earth.
Doug will.
If you have a disadvantage, then it there's an incentive to get creative. There's an incentive to do things differently. So with the running technique, it's basically long, long time ago, I decided, okay, I'm studying balance, but balance, what the hell is that, right? So anchor everything and measure it by locomotion. So evaluate the study of balance by, you know, how fast are you getting, right? And, you know, that's, it's so objective, so easy to stay on target, right, and not get confused. And so that was the, you know, the foresight that I had is like, okay, well, measure everything by locomotion. And so I study locomotion, and it's about the tensional balance. So it's the distribution of the ground loading force throughout your body that creates the most efficient transmission that matters, right? Because it's all just body weight. And if I have to compensate for some imbalance, well, now I can't optimize power. So Usain Bolt could run backwards and beat me, but to be him, his own best, he has to have tensional balance. And his running form, which is considered in, you know, poor, is actually excellent when you understand it. And that rotational power is the other thing. So it's tensional balance and rotation, because like we were talking earlier, it's everything, even the individual muscle fibers rotate. So it's all rotational. So you can think of a linear projection of a mass, or you can think of like a linear function, but to do it linear requires that everything's rotating, just because it always rotates. So reconciling this rotation right to left, because it's always just a shifting of weight, that's where power comes from. The sagittal stuff, that's the brace in the core, that's the weight evenly distributed, that's the head in the middle, the shoulders level, and that's strongest and most functional for picking up something heavy.
Let me pause you for just a sec. I know not everybody has gone to the video yet, and again, we've said this probably the sixth time of this episode, if not the 14th time, to take a look at some of the videos, because some of the movement you were demonstrating was certainly unique. I'm an expert running coach, and that certainly I've never seen anything like that. However, one thing that our listeners can sort of relate to is that idea of core on, high heel recovery, getting a decent knee drive, using gravity, falling forward. Those are themes that are very deep within our community. You were demonstrating something that was showing a combination of like rotational planes, which if you look at any high-level runner, historically, with a drone overhead or any kind of camera overhead, you're going to see plenty of swivel and rotation. So I think some of the conversation that we've had in the last 10 or 15 years about minimizing that rotation is a little bit ridiculous. And I happen to be close with Dr. Romanov and some of the pose advocates and everything. And I do principally believe in some of the rotational stuff. But if you are only listening, if only listened yet, what David was doing was a combination of like, a velociraptor and the Dougie all at once.
And it was fantastic. Like,
and, that, and that's what fantastic. It was. I mean, your legs are like coiling, and then your arms were like loose and kind of snapping. And then, you know, just from anybody that's read anatomy trains or anything like that, like you can kind of get what you're getting at using, you know, fascial forces and all that kind of stuff to be the contralateral spring to propel one forward. Like, I've never seen anything like it, and one of the points of us doing the show is to try to stay open to new ideas and concepts. It's fascinating for sure. My wife is a world-class runner at one point. I'm interested to show her the video, and she'd be like, what is going on? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe we'll try it after you have the baby.
There's some things to unpack there, okay? So basically, everything boils down to balance. Okay, so when you're running, you're actually not falling forward. And technically, we're all falling. Like, I'm falling right now, you're falling, and gravity doesn't care if it's your feet or your face, you're falling, right? So you obviously have to harness that force. But the moment when it matters, the maximum impact force has to be balanced, because it's about maximum force to and from the ground. So the concept of falling forward, it's not actually accurate. And if you watch the best, they're not falling forward. There's a propulsion, and their head in distance, their head is actually raising as they travel through the air. So if you were falling, you would think that the angle would be going forward, and the head would actually be dipping down. But it's a boom, boom, and it's an upward force. And if you look at the study by Peter Weyand, where he basically codified the concept that, look, it's force to and from the ground. That is, and it's a vertical force. And if you think about it, once you're past acceleration, and you're upright running at a constant speed or getting right. faster or you know holding the speed, if there were an ice slick as you're running along, you wouldn't slow down much. You would still be going because it's a vertical force that's making it all happen. So it's the vertical force that matters, and the vertical force is balance, and it's a head-over-foot rule. Well, not even a rule. It's a law because that's the anatomical biomechanical balance. And so the coil is the way that you're going to harness the power of the lats, and it's really an ipsilateral understanding to get the contralateral result. So and what I do, it looks crazy. It looks weird. It looks, I mean, I get it, right? I understand.
I mean, it's a velociraptor doing the Dougie.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. But the thing about it is, it's faster. So, and it's relative, that aspect of it is a very new discovery because, you know, 30,000 hours in, you know, on the 30,000th and first hour, the next discovery is pretty profound compared to the discovery 10 hours in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, when you, and it came from what? Hitting, swinging. When Marlon Byrd taught me how to swing a baseball bat, and I was like, oh, aha. And and literally within minutes, I had a new running technique. For distance, you know, my focus has always been sprinting.
Right.
And for distance, I think if you look at the Kenyan, Ethiopian women, you see perhaps the greatest efficiency in terms of the stride. So it's basically a very, very tight angle at the, you know, forearm and humerus, and it's a pronating sort of roll to the midline, and the idea is like it's head over foot, and it's just this, a lot of rotation happening, but the rotation is this Grakovetskian spinal engine rotation, meaning the shoulder,
right.
It's an underhand figure eight with the shoulders and overhand figure eight with the hips. So as the one side shoulder comes down and back, the same side hip is coming up and forward, and it's a mechanical thing. Just because we have a curved spine, the frontal plane flexion creates the counter rotation that gives you longer stride length, and then you're able to land on top of it. So there's a lot of just misconception. Because if you try to look at it still, it's all weird, and you know, pawing back's not what you want to do, but that's what it looks like, and front side mechanics. So this new way that looks crazy, Velociraptor stuff, it's a huge front side mechanic. And fascially, when you're here, you get more.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I get it anatomically. It's just, yeah.
It's
interesting.
It's weird. It's weird.
Interesting, yeah.
But ultimately, opinions don't count. Doesn't matter.
Right.
Ultimately, what's faster is faster.
Sure.
So that's how it'll play out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as lower body mechanics go, yeah. you, I feel like when I was watching you do the run, which again, go watch the video to see what the hell we're talking about. The easiest thing to notice at first glance is that your arm movement, your arm mechanics are different. You talked a lot about lat engagement and,
yes.
and how that plays into it. You talked a lot about how in order to have your head over your foot, you had to be in this kind of shifted stance. I'm not sure how to describe it. You can touch on that. But as far as lower body mechanics go, is it really that much different than regular running or pose running or any other running styles?
Yeah. So basically your objective is to lift your foot up is your objective. So you don't lift your knee up. You lift your foot up. Because if you lift your knee up, all of a sudden you're behind it. Right. So
you're intentionally, if you're lifting up your knee, you're getting your hip flexor involved in taking away from a hamstring.
Well, here's the thing is I happen to disagree with the idea that you want to curl the hamstring. So that's not what you actually want to do. You know, fall forward and curl the hamstring it doesn't make a sprinter faster for sure. Okay. Because none of them do it. And the curling, the hamstring's job is basically this. It is driving the leg down, but it really is this moment when it matters of this. It's almost like an isometric jolt, and it's boom, and then it's done, right? And then you want it off so it can fly through very fast without any restriction as you lift the foot up. You don't think about you, and what you want to do is think extension through the toes, lift the foot up. Knee's going to look like it's coming up, but the knee you want to think in terms of pulsing forward, and that side bending is going to give you the mechanics of a higher hip, and all the best do this. So I mean, it's you know, you watch the video, and of my 30,000 hours in studying movement, 7,000 of those hours are video review. I mean, it's just you can't understand something unless you can see it, right? And there used to be a debate that when a horse gallops, all four limbs don't leave the ground, right? And then, you know, somebody created a picture book where it's like, well, they do. So the
motion pictures.
Yeah. So the lower body, the lower body mechanics is basically with the lower body mechanics. The intent is you got to get your feet up. That's your intent. And you get, you, in no circumstance you flex the toes. You want to have the toe extension. And then the real intent is lateral to medial. So fourth and fifth metatarsal is the initiation point for a good runner. Whether you're distance or sprinter, it's the fourth and fifth metatarsal right behind the toes that has to initiate. It initiates before the moment of maximum impact, right? So you're receiving it there because structurally you're leveraging the power of the heel forward. Big toe, second toe, third toe tie into the talus on top of the calcaneus. For people listening, that's the heel bone is the calcaneus, and then the bone that floats on top of that is the talus. So you have two stories in the foot. And so what you have to do is it's fourth and fifth metatarsal, and then it's a pronating roll out through the big toe. And your reflex is to flex the toes. So any sense of imbalance or any efficiency, you have this little prone thing. And so that'll create the plantar fasciitis and the shin splints and all these problems, especially if your shoes are cantilevered up, and that's going to promote a flexion at the toe. You know, a flat or neutral is less... It's less excitatory for flexion of the toes. And these are reflexes that are working against you. So for the lower body mechanics, really what you want to do is don't mess with the width of your stride. So the head over foot, it's an upper body adjustment with the lats in the frontal plane that's going to make the alignment. And your width of your stride is what it is. Allison Felix has bow legs, and she crosses over the midline with her feet, right?
She does.
And other people have a little bit wider gait. So you don't mess with the feet, except for the fact that you got to land on fourth or fifth metatarsal. If your distance, by the time that moment happens when you're maximum loading, you're past the heel. So you get a propulsive heel strike. And you need to rely on that skeletal boom to create the endurance and the speed for over endurance. Now, a sprinter is going to be moving faster. It's going to be more leverage, so the heel's not actually going to hit as a sprinter. But it's the same exact foot mechanics that is really the focus of the lower body with the correct intent. Mm-hmm. So high knees and butt kick and all that, it's just the wrong intent. It's not going to yield the best result. And I would argue that a lot of people who are cued to do certain things actually don't do them. So you're succeeding in despite the cue, because some of the best sprint coaches in the world cue you to brace your core and keep, you know, the center line and don't have lateral deviation.
Right.
And that's wrong.
Right.
It's just fundamentally wrong.
Mm. Well, I mean, you take a look at something like the drag step as an innovation.
The Jamaican start out of the blocks?
Yeah. I mean, it's so counterintuitive. But then when you look at what it's doing, it's like it makes sense from a physics perspective once you analyze it in a much more deep way. But this is it's just interesting.
Yeah, for me, it's the most fascinating subject because it's the most universal and it has the greatest degree of carryover. Mm. So, if you know, locomotion is sort of the foundation for everything, because motion is the thing for every, you know, for all animals. And the very first animals were sidebenders.
Right.
So frontal plane is first.
So the I would say, like, principally, and we're getting, I may be too far down this, but like by focusing on that fourth metatarsal, there's a lateral quality to that which initiates a fascial response. So you're going to get a quick turnover. Just from what I'm trying to interpret you saying and from what I watched, it seems that you're going to get, a good a good sense of elasticity.
You're taking
to work the turnover, you're less reliant on both the hip flexor and the hamstring, effectively kind of relaxing those muscles. And then if you're integrating the upper body with that, and the timing's right, then you can use the fascial chains to kind of like quick step. But
well, it's skeletal and then myofascial. So the skeleton is strong laterally, and that's where you want to take all the slack out of the system.
Yeah.
So the muscles aren't working. It's the connective tissue. And that's really the secret. That's the game is make that. And it's the harmony and then it's the pulsing action to create more force faster, to get you harder on the ground and then off the ground faster. Because the more time you're on the ground, the more the forces sort of get stuck in your body. Right. The reason why that punch, you know, is so devastating is because it doesn't push at the end. Right. It's boom. So it's not in me. It's in you. Right. Whereas if I punch and push, well, now it's in me. right? Mm. So same thing with the ground, is when you pulse it correctly, have the timing right, you're hitting it harder, but there's less stress on the body. Yeah, so it's really weird.
Yeah, no, it's not weird. It makes, I mean,
well, it's weird from what would be a conventional
elasticity. I mean, Louis, I mean, a lot of people that have, I mean, the concept of taking a basketball and letting it bounce twice and figuring out two reps when you're doing these things is about the maximum amount of velocity under heavy loads.
I hadn't heard that. That's cool.
It's a very clever. Okay. I mean,
Louis Simmons, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But
I've read so much of it and seen so many of it. I didn't know that.
No, but one of the principles that he uses, he took a basketball and let it bounce and just observed it and then noticed that after the second bounce, it lost so much more return. And so he started, and then that is in part why you see a lot of doubles in some of the conjugate training system.
I love it.
But
I love it.
That's a side.
Yeah. No, I love it.
We should have you just go visit Louis.
I would love to hang out.
here's the thing. Like I one of the things that I use from Louis Simmons, and I've seen a lot of his stuff. Okay, a lot of his stuff. Train wide to capture everything inside. I got that from Louis Simmons, and it's just like so beautiful. And the lats. What's wide, right? What's wide? It's the lats. That's your core muscles, right? That's Bo Jackson. I want Bo carrying the ball is the lats, right?
It's like the glutes for your upper body.
Yeah. And think of the bridge, right? Structurally, it's the hips to the shoulders.
Yeah,
it spans
connects.
The whole thing. Yeah. And think about the origin of the lats, right? The origin of the lats is the most fibrous, densest tissue in your body. It's massive. Yeah. Lumbodorsal fascia or thoracolumbar fascia, whatever you want to call it. Mm. It's this and it's an origin. Yeah. It's a muscular origin. Yeah. So lats are like lats, the big three, right? The glutes are the biggest, the lats are second, the adductors are third. That, you know, adductor magnus, third biggest.
So a lot of people, when they discuss sprinting, they do talk about the lats, the thoracolumbar fascia, and the glutes in the serape effect, which you can go Google and learn about, and about how that oblique pull that you get from one shoulder crossing down to the contralateral hip does cause a lot of rotation, and that's what people use to help spring themselves forward when sprinting. Have you looked into any of that?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. So serape effect, the issue that I have with serape effect, okay, is that I get much better results and have much more power. Everything works better when I train rotation ipsilaterally. So serape is like, that's gravy, that's coming along for the ride, is structurally correct, and everything's happening. But if I train serape, I'm not training the most bang for buck. And if I'm training serape, well, then I'm really not training lat. It's much more anterior focused and, you know, doing this kind of stuff. And so that doesn't yield the same productivity that the ipsilateral, it's the spinal engine. It's the shoulder down and back, the same side hip up and forward, and the 10th and 11th rib is the central axis of that rotation. And when you understand that, it changes the game. Like, you're faster when you start training it that way. So the serape effect, it's all correct. There's nothing wrong about it, but that you don't want to invest in that training because it's the lat, and it's the frontal plane. So the rotation is initiated by the side bend. And if you think about swinging or throwing, it's pronation and supination. If I supinate, it's like I hold your bat, listener, put a bat in your hand, a stick in your hand, both hand, hold it the way you do, and then swing it. When you draw it back and the top hand supinates, you're coiling. That's winding the lat. And the other side is pronated, and that's unwinder, you know, creating a long coil. And then when you swing it through, your shoulders have to change. You watch, you know, the moment of impact for a baseball guy, it's you know, massive side bend. It's massive coil. That's where the power is. And it's actually not safe to rotate without side bending. And that's why you had this big craze about, you know, the anti-rotation training. Okay, well, you know, can't rotate and you got to resist the rotation. Well, it's really not a very effective way to train. It's not that productive. And side bending without transverse is very bad. You know, if you hold dumbbells and go side to side, well, you're the idiot in the gym who's going to have big problems, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the perfect blend and ratio of frontal with transverse that magnifies the power of sagittal and makes everything come together.
Hmm. Very cool. So to since we got to wrap up the show here really soon, I want to touch on one more point. So we mentioned Louis Simmons, and thereby we automatically start thinking about powerlifting, lifting heavy weights, et cetera, et cetera. And we were talking about deadlifting earlier.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you showed us, and again, go watch the video, was that when you were deadlifting earlier, you were not pressing through your heels. You were letting your heels kind of kiss the ground. They were floating just a little bit. And then as the weight was coming off the floor and you going through into full extension, you were plantar flexing coming up on your toes. So was that just a unique technique you would use in certain cases? Or is that an infallible statement that you never, ever want to push through your heels when you deadlift? Why were you doing that?
Okay, so basically the reason why I'm doing that is because that particular lift is designed for the athletic carryover. Okay, so that's why it exists.
This isn't designed to make you a better deadlifter necessarily.
No,
it's better
no.
athlete.
Well, with a straight bar, a barbell, you can't do it.
Right. You need a trap bar of sorts.
A trap bar, because you have to be in the center, right? And so what we're doing is it's all based on the principle of tensional balance. Mm-hmm. So spine and shin angle congruency is your fundamental guide to tensional balance for loading the ground. So if you watch the great athlete as he's cutting and he's driving.
So when you say athletic carryover, you're talking about sprinting, running, agility. Is that really what you're?
That's the foundation for the athletic. Like, you know, it's not nothing. None of this stuff's going to help you hit a baseball if you can't hit a baseball, right? But okay. If you can hit a baseball, this stuff's going to help you hit a baseball further, right? So it's the global gross motor movement, that locomotion, running, agility, jumping. Those are the things that we're after, right?
Okay.
And when we say athletics,
okay,
and throwing and swinging speed and power, but that particular deadlift is the idea is I want to harness and leverage the power of the heel, which is connected to the posterior, and you need to harness it to get the posterior, not make it anterior based. I want to leverage that forward, as far forward as I can, because that's how I'm going to create the most spring, right, and the most fascial return and skeletal, you know, stability. So that particular lift is the 45 stance, and then balance on the green dots, the fourth and fifth metatarsals, and then match the spine and shin angle so it's not a hip hingy deadlift. And you pull with that straight up, and you can actually lift heavier weight this way with a trap bar than you can by conventional means. It's very strange, but you can. And what we do with our deadlift, again, since it's athletic carryover, 9 inches off the ground or trap bar handles off the ground, that's not the rule. 6'5 doesn't pull what 5'5 does in my gym.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't care. I want your hands up just below your knee. That's where I want you, right? Because I don't care. I'm not competing in a deadlift. So this is completely different.
This is not for powerlifters. This is not for weightlifters. This is
No.
I mean, you might want to play with it as something that you might add in your training at some point. But
that's a good question. I don't know if you would or not.
I'll play with it now.
Yeah.
But
what's interesting, though, is just like with the mechanics, with the rotation – I have to give it up. Like, I mean, just and kind of like seeing that, and as we're having this discussion, I was playing with that position and feeling my adductor magnus turn on as I was getting out of that position. Now, we can teach people with a regular barbell to turn those very muscles on, weighted in the heel with a little bit of internal femoral rotation. But that's very difficult to teach people, and it's interesting.
It's interesting. It's a different way to do it, because
I just keep saying it's interesting.
Well, think about this.
But it is. I mean, I was like, okay, well, this is actually working those posterior muscles on the toes on a deadlift. Well, that's never really been said in a book.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Something I've been considering lately is how do we get people as strong as possible, fast as possible, and everyone's using a barbell. And you know, powerlifting, weightlifting, we use barbells, but it might not necessarily, if we got rid of all equipment and then we asked ourselves, how do we get better at this thing with modern technology, and we didn't have all this tradition behind us, would we even go to a straight bar barbell, or would we be using like what you're talking about right now? And so I think there's an opportunity to look at it through that lens. And then also keeping tradition as well, but learning how to integrate this properly.
Here's what I would say, and this is what I told the strength coach, is, you know, if I'm looking to build mass, well, there's really nothing better than a back squat, right? If I want to put the slabs of meat on your body, I think a back squat, because it has that eccentric component first, so I think it's superior for building mass than a deadlift. where, you know, it's the other way around? And are you really doing the full eccentric on a deadlift, or are you letting gravity do some of it too, right? So I think it depends on your objective, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at a deadlift in and of itself, I can tell you exactly how it originated. It's two guys sitting there in a grain shop on Friday, and they're bored shitless, and they got 3 hours before they close the shop, and there's an axle wheel out in the back, and it's like, hey, you think you pick that up? Yeah, I'll pick it up. $10 says you can pick it up. There, boom, you got the deadlift, right? And now because of the competitive nature of men, and York Barbell decided that, you know, 9 inches is where the hole is, okay, well, that's where we are. If you want a deadlift, yep, that's the rules, and you know, can only compete apple to apples. How much weight could you pull if the thing was, you know, I remember the leg press, the universal thing when you were in the gym and you were 7 years old and you stacked that sucker out because you only had to just bend your knee, you know, straighten your knees an inch. Mm-hmm. It leverage, oh, yeah. Leverage, yeah. Right?
Junior high, man.
Right, leverage. Exactly. Oh, we used to go in there and like,
I could
okay.
do 850 pounds. Yeah, exactly. Also fucking
right,
strong.
Right. So that deadlift is basically the derivation of this was Allison Felix high school coach. Bear strength, and
she's a sprinter.
Barry, what's his name? Sprinter. He did a deadlift routine with her, and it was basically five or fewer pulls, concentric only. You know, you wait 5 minutes rest, and you immediately follow with plyometric, and it's just the genius formula. And then Ryan Flaherty is one of the best speed guys in the world. His innovation was, well, let's do it in a trap bar. Right? It's just better, right? And then my innovation is basically, well, do the same exact recipe, right? It's the same baking instructions, but now let's do it through the green dots so that we create more carryover. So
the green dots, for those that haven't seen your poster, right, are right. What you fourth said earlier was pushing through the fourth and fifth metatarsals,
yes,
which is essentially like where you're, you know, where you're your little toe, your pinky toe, and your second toe connect to your foot.
Yes, just behind the pinky and fourth toe. So fourth toe, fifth toe, pinky, and that toe next to it was right behind that. And the reason why
the ring toe.
Yeah, the ring toe. The reason why they're green dots is because if you start telling people, okay, well, it's behind your pinky, you know, mm-hmm. and they were originally green circles, but circle is not as good a word as dot.
This guy thought the whole thing through.
Queuing, right? I'm a best idea wins guy, right? So the green dots came from Cal Poly with Coach Chris Holder. You guys know Coach Chris Holder?
No.
Cal Poly. No. You know him?
I don't know him, but I know of him.
Yeah. All right, so he's genius. You guys have to set up a show with him, and he has to tell you guys about Qigong for sports performance. All right?
I was actually I'm actually looking into Qigong myself.
Okay, all right. So you need to talk to Dr. Holder, Taoist priest Dr. Holder, Dr.
Perfect.
So I'll give you his email, I'll give you his phone. He's a must for you guys, okay? A must for you guys. Cal Poly is the first institution that incorporated WEC method. Because I've known Chris, because of our mutual interest in the Asian arts and medicine. We've known each other for 10 years, and we geek out on a level that, you know, most people just be falling asleep with. So we have that relationship. And then his assistant coach, Chris White, who was a BOSU hater, by the way, okay, you know, circus tricks bullshit, he saw the deadlift on, you know, on video on Facebook or whatever. He saw it, and he's like, okay, that's interesting. Like pulling on the balls of your feet in a deadlift, seeing how much weight was lifting. So he started doing it, and he started succeeding with it, and his athletes started succeeding with it. Fewer injuries because there's nothing in the lower back. He's like, hey, Holder, you know, can we go down and see WEC? So, and Holder and I didn't really, you know, we didn't really converse so much about the strength and conditioning. We conversed about Chinese stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So Holder's like, yeah. So we set up this meeting. They came down for 2 days in December, and it fucking, I mean, it's epic. They went up. It was winter break, and Holder is super smart, and he was athletic. And White is like a fucking stud, okay? And he went to Cal Poly, so he's a genius. Don't let stupid people in there. So they don't exist. So basically, White spent the entire Christmas break training all the things that I taught him, the deadlift, the coiling core, the compression stuff, and he's an athlete, so he could feel it. He's like, he's faster than he's ever been. He jumps higher than he ever has, and so it was enough to convince them that, okay, we're going to implement this with our team. And so what it did is it gave me the benefit of implementation with 250 athletes. Like, I'm good one-on-one, but you tell me to prepare the buffet for 75? Like, oh, shit, my pants. How the fuck am I going to do that, right? So they had the sort of the experience in that organizational time management. How are we going to actually teach all these guys? And that's where Green Dots came from. Because Green Circle... Circle takes me a long time. What the fuck? It's a circle? No, it's a dot. Get on your dot. So it was that. It was those guys who came up with the cue, and literally, I text back and forth. We have this like top secret little like Facebook group that nobody knows about except for now. That where we where we share these ideas and videos. So, like we go back and forth, and every day we're sharing it. I mean, White just he texted me and look, posted a video today. I did one. Today and yesterday, so we're constantly sharing the ideas. And so, I mean, and it's the result rules, so that's, you know, all I care about is the result. Right. If pink panties made me better, I'd wear pink panties. I don't care, right? Why do they do drugs, right? Why is there a drug war? Because it makes you better.
Entertainment.
It makes you better, right?
quick question before we shut down. What are those big ropes for?
Oh, those big ropes. So, okay. Yep. So that gives you man strength, that stuff over there.
So, it's a special kind of strength.
Yeah. So
man strength.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you just like again, like I, my goal with my little inadequate, you know, smaller, weaker, slower body, like I don't want to feel intimidated. Like if I go to prison, like, you know, you know the joke,
it sounds
right?
Like you're counting on it.
No.
Not
but
again.
Have you heard the joke? All right. So guy goes into prison. Right. He gets
pulls out his green dots.
Exactly. Well, green dots help you get away, right? But so he goes in, and this poor guy didn't. Listen to the joke. So he goes in the little cell, right? He meets his cellmate. He's 400 pounds. He's big. He's badass, right? First thing the guy says to the little guy coming in is, "What do you want to be, the husband or the wife?" Okay, that's an interesting choice. Those are my options, husband or wife. All right, well, I'll be the husband, I suppose, okay? I would pick husband, probably.
Yeah.
As much as I wouldn't like either one. But so the guy says to him, "All right, well, get over here and suck your wife's cock." All right. So that's the sort of
there's no right answer.
Right, there is not a correct answer. that's sort of the existential, like, you know, my competitive drive, and, you know, and if God were handing out the cards, I'd be the biggest, baddest motherfucker on the planet, right? But I'm not. So I just want to feel very comfortable against a guy who otherwise could kick the shit out of me, and I want to be able to, like, block it and then run the fuck away, like, you know, just so I don't get...
Sounds good. Well, you know what? We're going to run the Spartan Beast at the World Championships at the end of September. So, I mean, Kenny's a running guy, but Doug and I, you know, not so much. So maybe we could
My time is past the best.
Maybe we could play around with your training methods to prepare. I think that would be fun.
Here's what it is. It's an investment in driving up the five, the up and down the five. So it's a pain in the ass, but let's do this. Let's schedule some sessions where you come down here and I'll put you through sessions, okay? On the path to independence, so we don't have to, you know, spend fucking 45 minutes, hour and a half on the five, right? Three or four sessions will get the job done in terms of that, and then we'll just touch base, and the technique of it will take a little bit of time to get, but the exercise lays the foundation so the nervous system will be able to adopt it, so let's do that.
Sounds good.
That'll be an amazing project. And then let's potify or whatever the hell. You know.
You want to run the race with us?
No, because I don't want to do the obstacles. I'll run in between them.
I don't think they're going to let you do that. For every obstacle you skip, you've got to do like 30 burpees.
I know. Well,
you'll just be a burpee machine.
So you have to do the burpees and the obstacle, or you just get through the burpees?
You can skip the obstacle if you do all the burpees.
Okay. Or if you fail the obstacle, you still have to do burpees.
Well, so I don't want to dive under cattle prods that are going to shock me. And like, I'm a lazy guy, right? So like, people ask me, do you run? Well, no, I sprint all the time, but I don't really run.
You know? Plus,
so
you got to rethink diving, it seems like.
What's that, diving?
Or another sport.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly, yeah.
You're going to be like...
Idle hands, right?
That's another way to backflip.
All right, if people want to find out more... I mean, what are you working on? So you have the BOSU ball. You talked about how it could be useful. I would recommend... a gym have at least one to play around with, mm-hmm. if not more.
The clubs are cool too.
So if people want to know more about what you got going on and how it could be useful to them, where do they go?
All right, so you go to WECKmethod.com. That's where it is. But
W-E-C-K.
W-E-C-K method.com. Here's the thing is, like, my training is so, like, up to date. So I'm putting together the education that's most current, because October 2016 is when the game changed for me. And then it was like, oh, okay, you know, don't look at anything before. Now it starts, right? So
that's what I say every 6 months.
I know. And everybody does, right? So I think basically the way it is anybody listening to this, write David@WECKmethod.com. Reach out to me personally, because I guarantee you want to squat more, you want to be better at that. I guarantee you this will get you the results that you want, and you don't want a bottleneck in your gym, so you need to get a lot of them. but the idea here is that this is a movement, and I am bending over backward until I get, you know, WECKmethod.com up to, you know, okay, now it's just easy. So anybody who's highly motivated and you want to do that, I'm a resource. I'll video call. I just want people to get better, because that's the proof. And what I said to Ray Regno, when I reached out to Ray, because Ray's a real open-minded guy, and you know, he didn't slam the door in my face, I said, Ray, listen, here's the deal. I'm going to give you a BOSU ball, right? I'm going to give you this new BOSU ball. Here's what you're going to do with it. If you do it, you can keep it. And if you don't do it, well, then I'll take it back. Does that sound like a fair trade? And we're going to touch base every Friday. So I'm going to come over every Friday at 8 a.m., and we're just going to have our little hour geek out session, compare notes, see how you're doing with it. And it worked. He uses it. And now he has 6 of them, and he teaches people with it. So, and for me, it's you either use something because it has utility or you don't, right? Mm-hmm. You buy a toothbrush, you actually use it, right? You buy some exercise gizmo, you can stop using it most of the time, right? A barbell, you'll never stop using it. Mm-hmm. You're never going to stop using it. You know, the phone, you're never going to stop using those things because they're utility. And that's what, especially what the new BOSU ball is. There is value in it unlike anything else to make you better. And I'm not some salesy guy. I'm giving this software away in terms of coiling core. You can do it with a dumbbell, do it kettlebell, barbell. You know, landmine's awesome for it. I want to give the software away, make people better on a new paradigm, give it away. And I happen to have a proprietary product that offers something. So great, I'll monetize that way, and then monetize with the education. So that's really, you know, because this stuff isn't so simple. And it is counterintuitive in a lot of respects. But again, like, it's faster, so who cares, right? Just get over it. It's faster, you know. Don't need to make fun of it. You don't need to hate it. Just accept the fact that it's fucking faster and learn it. Like, that's you're stronger, you're better, whatever. So it's the fruits of more than 30,000 hours of geeking out. And we went to lunch. You know how fucking nuts I am.
Yeah, no doubt. Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
and
David.
I look forward to training.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.